views expressed on Health Talk are those of the medical professional only. They are not meant to serve as medical advice. If you have a health issue, see your doctor or visit a clinic.
This is Health Talk, a weekly look at a healthcare topic important to you. Health Talk examines a healthcare issue with a medical professional and takes your phone calls. Health Talk brought to you by Fresenius Medical Care and Midwest Nephrology Consultants, with 13 clinics and offices throughout the Kansas City metro area. And by the Center for Practical Bioethics, raising and responding to ethical issues in health and healthcare for 25 years. Now here's your host for Health Talk, Laurel LeBoux.
And good evening. Welcome to this edition of Health Talk. Our topic this evening is caregiving. The statistics around caregiving are daunting. An estimated 120 million adult Americans are either providing unpaid care to an adult family member or friend, or have provided this care in the past. About 22% of the population, about 46 million of us, are providing care to an adult relative or friend. And more than 138 million Americans believe they will need to provide care to someone in the future. Joining us this evening to talk about caregiving is Sandy Silva of the Center for Practical Bioethics and Lynn Polk of the American Red Cross. Sandy, let's start with you. Just shared a whole lot of numbers, but it comes down to individuals who are concerned about their loved one, concerned about a friend who may need some help.
All of us are potential caregivers. We're either caregiving now, we have been caregivers, or we will be caregivers in the future. I suspect that as a nation live longer and actually live healthier, but still we will encounter different periods in our life when we're going to need some help. And we are going to call on our family and friends, our neighbors. We're going to call on them first. The AARP released some numbers to add to some of the statistics that you provided, Laurel. In 2008, $375 billion worth of care was provided by family and friends. That's unpaid care, $375 billion. There are some that refer to family and friend caregivers as the backbone of long-term care.
I was going to say, you could compare that $375 billion to the total spent the same year for home health care and nursing home care, and that was half that.
So it's something that we're all going to have to anticipate in some way, but being as we are, we're not doing a very good job of looking forward to that, are we, Sandy?
Well, we don't have a real long look-ahead period, Laurel. Lots of times families need to be standing outside the discharge planner's office in a hospital after their mom has fallen and she's going to go home in 24 hours when it dawns on them that, oh my gosh, we're going to be caregivers. One of the primary messages that we work to share with the greater Kansas City community is the importance of early self-identification. All family members need to at least once in a while recognize that what's going to come down the pike. And it's so much easier when you can use time to have conversations within your family, to listen carefully to what your older adult family members would like, to build support systems, to garner information. And it's so much easier to do that than in the middle of a crisis.
Lynn Polk with the American Red Cross, it is something that people have to prepare for, and that's one thing that you're trying to do in your position at the Red Cross, correct?
That's correct. I manage the Family Caregiving Program, a program of the National Red Cross that allows me to go out and teach family caregivers the different nursing skills that they need, because truthfully, most family caregivers learn with on-the-job training. Mom falls, like Sandy said, and then all of a sudden, gosh, I'm a caregiver. If we were planning for it, we knew that mom was having a hip replacement in a week, we would make more concrete plans for adaptive equipment and that kind of thing. So I get to go out and help people who didn't have that opportunity or didn't take that opportunity to do some planning. I also get to teach classes all over the metro for people who are thinking ahead. So
the people that you're dealing with, they come from different kinds of situations, different families, and the family dynamics are something that is fairly important here, is it not? Every family is a little bit different.
Absolutely, but I have to echo what Sandy said. If we could sit down with our families and make some plans ahead of time, it would be so much easier on all of us. And sometimes the family dynamics are such that I still remember how my big brother picked on me, so I'm not going to let him get involved in this. I know better. Sometimes we need an outside mediator, and there are geriatric care planners who you could call, and maybe you have to pay somebody to sit down with you once and help the family, somebody with some real knowledge to sort through the various problems that families need to make plans for.
And Sandy, you were saying self-identify as quickly as possible. Maybe within some families, that isn't all that apparent on who the single caregiver will be or who will work in tandem to be the caregiver for their loved one.
Oh, yeah. It's the daughter.
It's the daughter? Well, okay. Let's ask, who's the typical caregiver then?
The typical caregiver, in terms of a national profile, Laurel, is a woman who is over 45 years of age and most times employed full-time. So it can really create a burden. Now, this is not meant to be a zero-sum game. At this point, there's a growing number of male caregivers. And speaking as a woman who has been a caregiver, I'm all for sharing the responsibilities. and I think that really will become critical.
Well, with the people that you work with, do you see those kinds of situations playing themselves out, Lynn?
You mean where families have to learn to get along? Yes,
yeah.
I do. And I do see more men stepping up. A lot of the people who come to my classes are men who are struggling. Maybe a lot of them, I guess recently I've been teaching a lot of classes about dealing with Alzheimer's, and so that's fresh in my memory. sorry about that. But a lot of the men are coming to those classes and really wanting to learn how to manage the care for someone like that. So I think the men have stepped up a lot in the last 10 years or so. But families in general have to learn to share the tasks and maybe just sort through who can do what. You know, if the brother can't handle hands-on care, he can mow the lawn, change the oil in the car.
Write a check,
absolutely. Mm. Long-distance caregivers can write checks.
Right.
I'm in the position right now of a mother-in-law who's up in Iowa and needing care, and we're down here and both of us very busy. But that's about what we can do, is send flowers, write a check, call, and try to cheer up the caregiver. But be involved in any way that you can.
Well, Sandy, would it be fair to say that caregiving kind of carries with it a succession of choices that people have to make? And sometimes that next choice is even more difficult than the previous one. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely, because I would suggest that caregiving is going to be almost a stage of life for all of us. And while we may be able to help our loved ones solve a problem, negotiate a crisis, come up with a solution of some kind, as their capacities decrease, that same issue may rise to the surface again. So maybe mom is having some mobility issues within the home. And that, at present, is solved by picking up throw rugs, rearranging some furniture, putting in lighter or more powerful light bulbs in a dark hallway, possibly grab bars. So you think, okay, great, we've got that solved. Mom's okay. Well, as luck would have it, she's not going to stay at that same level of ability. So what's going to, in 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road, 5 years down the road, that same mobility question within the home is going to surface again. And then it might be an issue of how do we move the bed from the second floor down to the first floor? Because, or do we buy a Stairmaster or with the riding chair that goes on the stairs? So we have to remember that it's going to be progressive, and there's never going to be one solution. It certainly is never a cookie-cutter solution from family to family. But even within families, we're going to revisit some of these things and some of these questions over time.
Our topic this evening is caregiving. Our guests are Sandy Silva of the Center for Practical Bioethics, Lynn Polk of the American Red Cross. If you have a question or a comment, please give us a call at 576-7798. 576-7798. Health Talk continues after this on News Radio 980 KMBZ. Welcome back to Health Talk. My name is Laurel LeBou, and joining us this evening is Sandy Silva with the Center for Practical Bioethics and Lynn Polk with the American Red Cross. And Health Talk is brought to you by Fresenius Medical Care and Midwest Nephrology Consultants with 13 clinics and offices throughout the Kansas City metro area. We are talking about caregiving. If you have a question or a comment, 576-7798 is the number. 576-7798. And once again, Sandy Silva, Lynn Polk are joining us to talk about this topic. Is there a typical scenario that we can work through to be able to identify what the issues are?
Laurel, I would say that there isn't a typical scenario because everything is personal. However, at the same time, I would suggest that there are components that people need to keep their eyes open for. Be very informed about medical information. Older adults certainly need someone to be their advocate, somebody to really be there in their corner, somebody to be there at physician appointments with them to help them remember, to help them understand, to help them ask additional questions. It goes without saying, finances, critical. Need to look at insurance programs. What works? What is covered? What isn't covered? Is there long-term care? And how is that going? How are some of the services that may be needed? How are they going to be paid for? I would suggest to you that the most important dynamic or the most important component when someone is faced with taking care of a family member or a friend is the personal relationships. They are critical for the well-being of the caregiver as well as the care recipient.
576-7798 is the number. Lynn, do you have anything to add to that?
Just adding on what Sandy said is that the role reversal can become kind of an issue, too, where somebody refers to it as the powdered bottom syndrome. Anybody that ever powdered your bottom doesn't want you helping them with those kinds of care issues. So, when you end up having to remind mom that she needs to have a bath or help them with personal issues can be very awkward at best.
Sure.
I've heard people say that there's a distinct role reversal, that the parent becomes the child and the child becomes the parent. And I disagree. Mm-hmm. I believe that that is disrespectful to the autonomy and the independence of a person who has lived a long, successful, fulfilling life. And that delicate balance of really coming in and being supportive to your loved one and yet respecting their autonomy and recognizing that they still very, very much want and they very much need to continue to be the masters of their own ship. Many times caregivers, especially caregivers that have very big personalities, love to come into the situation and think that they're going to control everything and they're going to solve every problem. And unfortunately, sometimes that can really turn on its head, and that caregiver then can become so overwhelmed with the dependency that they have created that the burnout is significant.
Well, you mentioned burnout, and one of the big things, as we've talked off air, is that caregivers need a rest. Sometimes, probably more often than what people realize. Would you say that's the case, Lynn?
Absolutely. We start into caregiving. I call it the accidental caregiver, like that old movie, The Accidental Tourist. Something happens, and you step up to solve the immediate problem, and you go into it the way Sandy said, thinking I can fix this. Many of us are fixers, but as time goes on, the problems get deeper and deeper, and you've fixed things and created the belief that you're the only one who can fix things, and then you're exhausted. So part of what I do in teaching caregivers, one of the most popular classes by far when I do the statistics at the end of the year, the most popular class is Caring for the Caregiver, where I teach them self-care, and we spend a lot of time talking about, even if it's 2 hours a week, so you can go pick out your own produce or something, do what you need to do to keep yourself you so that you can get away from the situation. And it's good for the care recipient to have other people pop in and visit with them too.
Are there health issues that might result if a caregiver gets too deeply into it?
Oh, absolutely. There's quite a long list. You can have high blood pressure, heart palpitations, nausea. You can have memory problems of your own, anger issues, depression. People who are still employed, as in Kansas City, we figure there are 584,000 employed caregivers, can have problems at work, interpersonal relation problems at work, because they're so exhausted from being it all the time. Many, many health issues. The one that seems kind of ironic, though, is the memory. I've had people who are caring for Alzheimer's patients, and it is so stressful for them and so time-consuming that they'll say to me, what are we going to do if my memory goes first? I'm starting to have problems. And to convince them that it's stress and that they need to take that time out and care for themselves.
And I think that we can learn a lesson from something that we've all experienced. When we're flying on an airplane, we're told before that plane leaves the ground that in the case of an emergency, if you are flying with a young child, make sure you put your oxygen mask on first before you put on the mask of the child. And that is such a critical message for caregivers, because unfortunately, some of the ailments that Lynn has mentioned can reach such a height that caregivers die before the person they're caring for. And while it may feel a little bit uncomfortable, and while it might be a harsh question, sometimes caregivers need to just check in with themselves and say, am I taking good enough care of myself? Because if I don't, what would happen to my loved one without me? And unfortunately, that does happen in some situations.
576-7798 is the number. It would seem like it would be hard to get off that treadmill, though. Do you find people almost resist getting off the treadmill?
Oh, absolutely. That? Absolutely. Because we are the ones who love our family member, and we really think we can do it best. And so we think that's the very best thing. But you just have to step back and let somebody else step up once in a while. It's better for everybody.
And there are some things that we do best as family members. There's just to be able to sit and spend time with a loved one. That may mean that you have to pay somebody to cut the grass. It may mean that you have somebody come in and clean the house a couple of times a month. And those are dollars that are well spent. So it's a system of saying, what is it that only I can do? And what services can be provided by somebody else? And that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be paid services. There's other family members. Somebody may, in fact, have a teenage son that needs a little bit of pocket money, and they can come and cut that grass. Neighbors can be a wonderful, wonderful support system. Just knowing that you've got the telephone number of your dad's neighbor, if you can call him and say, have you seen him outside today? Could you go knock on the door? He isn't answering the phone. Well, sometimes he doesn't answer the phone because he put it under a pillow and he can't hear it. But it's nice to know. So there's so many different informal support systems that can bolster the caregiver, but that means they've got to let go a little bit and they've got to reach out and ask for help.
You talked about the health issues that can happen. People who have been involved in very acute caregiving for a long period of time, there are statistics that show that some of them shorten their lives by as much as 10 years.
No kidding.
The caregiver's life.
Wow.
And the number one reason someone gets admitted to a nursing facility is not falls. People think that's the number one reason, but it isn't. It's caregiver burnout. There's no longer anybody who has the energy or the ability to continue to care for them at home.
576-7798 is the number. Our guests this evening, Sandy Silva with the Center for Practical Bioethics, Lynn Polk with the American Red Cross. We'll be taking a break here. 576-7798 is the number. Be back on Health Talk after this on News Radio 980 KMBZ. Laurel LeBou on Health Talk, brought to you in part by the Center for Practical Bioethics, raising and responding to ethical issues in healthcare for more than 25 years, and Blessed Trinity Home Healthcare, committed to meeting the home health needs of the people they serve. Our topic this evening is caregiving, and Sandy Silva is with us from the Center for Practical Bioethics and Lynn Polk with the American Red Cross. 576-7798 is the number if you have a question. So, Lynn, you work on this issue with the American Red Cross. You do a lot of public presentations on this issue. Talk to us about the program that you work around this issue at the American Red Cross.
Okay, it consists of 9 modules, which were developed originally in Kansas City and then sent to the National Red Cross. And the National Red Cross tweaked them and has put together a booklet and a DVD that people can purchase if they want. That's a $25 product. And then from that booklet and the information, I use clips from the video each time. I teach the 9 modules. They cover things like taking care of yourself as a caregiver, legal and financial things that you need to sort out as you enter into caregiving, how to do some of the personal care. That one's a lot of fun. I have a life-size geriatric mannequin, and we drag that and a whole lot of equipment, and we practice various skills.
I bet that's interesting in the parking lot to bring that in. People wondering what you're doing.
It's interesting driving around Kansas City with her strapped in the seat in the back. I do get some funny looks.
I bet you do.
Then the general caregiving skills, which is medication administration and how to take vital signs and what they mean and at what point would you call the doctor and a lot of stuff that all my years of nursing, I get to do some of that. The one on moving and positioning people, I think, is particularly important if you're caring for an elderly person or someone who's been immobilized from an accident or a stroke, and you have to move them certain ways. You want to know how to do it correctly so that you don't hurt yourself and thereby shorten your caregiving career. There's a class on healthy eating, and that one I've kind of made into 2 tracks. One that I do a lot around the community is heart healthy, brain healthy eating, kind of a Mediterranean diet thing. But the other one I rarely get to do, and I have so many little products and adaptive devices to help people eat if they have very weak neck muscles and can't tip their head back to drink. I have a special cup that's cut out for the nose and all kinds of fun things. So every class consists usually of some lecture with PowerPoint, some video clips, and then some hands-on play with the toys kind of thing. A lot of question and answers, very informal.
So do you find that people go to more than one class?
Oh, I have groupies.
Oh, hey.
No, it's really
fun. Like groupies.
It's fun. Some of them do. It depends on what their needs are, and that's the cool thing about the program. Mm. You can just pop in and take the one on Alzheimer's disease if that's the issue you're dealing with, or you can take a multiple of them.
576-7798 is the number here. What kind or where can people go to get more information about that program?
They can go to www.kcredcross.org and click on the training tab, and that will take you up, and then click on family caregiving, and there is the schedule.
Okay, great. Sandy, what about your work then with the Center for Practical Bioethics? And there's a project called KC4, Aging in Community, if I'm remembering it correctly now, and I work there, and that's so I should know that off the top of my head, but tell us about KC4.
Sure, Laurel, I'm happy to do that. KC4 Aging in Community is an initiative that has been sponsored by the Center for almost 3 years now, and it developed out of the recognition that there were so many different things that come into play when we think about our aging society. The fact of the matter is that in the Kansas City region right now, about 1 in 5 people are over the age of 65. In the next 20 years, that's going to double. We are going to see 1 in 10 now is 65 or older. 1 in 5 will be 65 or older in the next 20 years. We will see growth rates of older adults, those being over 65, anywhere from 136% to 140% in some of the counties in the greater Kansas City region. And there's a couple of things that I find, statistics that I find remarkably interesting. Taking the entire planet into consideration, in the year 2017, there will be an equal number of people that are over the age of 65 and under the age of 5. Thereafter, the population over 65 will grow dramatically, and the population of under 5-year-olds will shrink. Right now, on the planet, of all the people who have ever been 65 years of age, 60% of them are now living here. Mm-hmm. So this is not just...
This is ground zero right here.
This is not... This is not only about Kansas City. This is not only about Kansas and Missouri. This is not only about the United States. This is truly a planetary phenomenon. And it's going to change all aspects of how we live and work and play for all ages, not just older adults.
So the ripple effect is in healthcare, it's transportation, housing, those kinds of things that will definitely the aging population will have an impact on that.
Absolutely, Laurel. The KC4 Aging and Community Initiative is actually broken up into six different work groups, and those are caregiving, health sciences, transportation, housing, social and civic engagement, and workforce development. Caregiving, as we're speaking about it tonight, it's a perfect example of how those things all come together. If I'm a caregiver to one of my parents, then I'm going to be faced not just with caregiving, but transportation issues, okay? Mobility. How are they going to get around inside their house, and how are they going to get around outside their house? What about the kind of house they're going to live in? What is a zero-step entry anyways? You know,
and where should that house be?
Yeah.
Sure.
A multitude of things. And the whole idea of social and civic engagement is critical for older adults. One of the worst things that can happen to an older adult is for them to become isolated. And as our population ages, we're also going to see, particularly in the next 10 to 15 years, many people stay engaged in the workforce, sometimes for compensation. And also, even those people that retire, the baby boomers are not going to play bingo. Okay? They are going to want to stay engaged in productive work. And so the whole notion of volunteering, although there might not be compensation involved, is going to become critically important.
We talk a lot about sprawl and the fact that there are so many miles of interstates in the Kansas City area, a lot of concrete. And so how that all evolves will be something that's going to be interesting to watch.
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch for sure. One of the things we all love about Kansas City is that we're out here in the Midwest, and we've got all kinds of space, and there are some of us that build houses on 2 acres, and even if we look at Kansas City in the last 10 or 15 years, when I first came to Kansas City in 1991, there wasn't such a place as 135th Street. It was somebody's farm. Okay, how are we going to get services out to all of the people that live in the metro area? We're not talking about a rural issue here. This is a metropolitan area. And how are we going to get the people to the services? Huge transportation issue.
Well, in some of the things, one thing I found interesting, just think about the parking lot at Oak Park Mall or any mall for that matter.
Exactly.
And, you know, you're driving into that parking lot as a person over 65 or 85, whatever the age is, and you can't find a parking spot that's a less than about half a mile to get there. That's a huge issue, isn't it?
It absolutely is. There's so many different considerations. What about a person that needs to use public transit? Even when there is a transit stop near any kind of a major shopping center or a big box store, it is always on the outskirts of the parking lot. So somebody who is reliant on transportation, possibly because either they can no longer drive or they no longer can afford to maintain their car, is a big issue for them. Then we see these little shelters that are built at bus stops, and many times they're built so low that the bus can't get underneath them. So even though someone might be able to sit in a protected area during bad weather, they're still going to have to get wet. They're still going to have to slosh through the snow to be able to get on the bus.
So if we address this properly, communities will look different. Where people live will be different. What kind of health care they get and how they get it, that'll all be different, won't it?
It will, and that's the heart and soul of the initiative. The message is that no one entity is going to solve this. It is truly going to take everybody. It's going to take political will that's going to come from grassroots citizens. It's going to take civic leaders. It's going to take our elected officials. And there's not enough money now, but there will never be enough money. money is not going to solve this problem. People are going to have to solve this problem working together. And I'm very delighted to say that KC4 Aging and Community does exist. We work very closely with the Mid-America Regional Council and the planning efforts for the entire metropolitan area. We have held and convened forums and invited elected officials, and they've been well attended. So it's small steps, but we're getting there.
So for more information on KC4, people can go to
the Practical Bioethics website, which is www.practicalbioethics.org, as well as www.kc4aic.org.
Okay, great. We're talking about caregiving this evening. Sandy Silva, Center for Practical Bioethics, Lynn Polk of the American Red Cross. 576-7798 is the number. We'll take another break here. Be back after this on News Radio 980 KMBZ. Lorella Boo on Health Talk, brought to you in part by Blessed Trinity Home Healthcare, committed to meeting the home health needs of the people they serve. The Center for Practical Bioethics, raising and responding to ethical issues in healthcare for more than 25 years. Fresenius Medical Care, a Midwest nephrology consultants with 13 clinics and offices throughout the Kansas City metro area. We're talking about caregiving this evening with Sandy Silva of the Center for Practical Bioethics, Lynn Polk, with the American Red Cross. 576-7798 is the number if you have a question. As I prepared for this program, I looked online, and they had a list of top 10 questions that we won't have time to get to all of them. But I wanted to throw them out to you two to see how we can suggest people work through some of these issues. And the first one is fairly typical, that my parents live in a different state than I do. How do I locate the home care services they need? Lynn, do you want to take that one?
Sure. I have a bias because I was administrator for Medicare-certified home care agency. So I would say, particularly since you're out of state, that you would want to go with an agency that had met the standards in order to be credentialed by Medicare. So you can go to the National Association of Home Care website, which I believe is just nahc.org.
Or they can Google that. And
right.
Something would come up,
right.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You can call the Division of Senior Services. Every state has, they call them slightly different things, but you can get a list that way or Google them. You can ask neighbors and friends of your parents for recommendations. It's always a good idea to know the neighbors next to your parents when you're going to be a distance away. There's a lot of care that can be handled by neighbors. So to get home health care is not that difficult to find the companies, but in order to qualify for it, you will need to have a doctor's order, and there has to be some skilled care that can be provided, and that can all be explained to you by the doctor at that time.
Another question involved an individual feeling stretched between the job and all the things that they have to do, and wondering how they can approach their employer about the situation so they can know about it and act accordingly. Sandy, what would you suggest in a scenario like that?
The first step is to be honest with your supervisor. Let them know before the crisis what is going on in your life so that you're not faced with trying to run in with a Chicken Little, the sky is falling scenario. That can be very helpful. Also, be aware that companies that have HR departments or HR managers really are well-versed in some of the information that you need in terms of family medical leave. They can sit down and they can talk with you about whether or not the company offers any kind of elder care benefits that might be offered under their cafeteria plan. Lots of times when we're raising our families and we have our health insurance or we're aware that we have an EAP, an employee assistant program at our workplace, we understand that we can take time off maybe for our to take our son to the dentist, but we don't know exactly who is an eligible family member. HR people can tell you that. They can eliminate any kind of question. And we spend a lot of time being fearful, saying, "Oh, we don't want our employer to know that we might be dealing with a family issue." And they can really offer you a lot of good information that is specific to your company.
Okay.
They may also allow some flex time once they're aware of the situation, or allow you to work from home a half a day or something.
In about a minute or a couple of minutes, Lynn, let me hit you with a final one here, where a young family wants to maybe bring mom or dad in the home to live with them. What kind of considerations should they keep in mind under that kind of possibility?
Well, multi-generational living used to be the norm, but we're not very used to that anymore. So one of the things to be aware of as you're making your plans is space, literal space and emotional space, that mom or dad is used to having their own place and they run things the way they want to. And you have always been their child and you will always be their child. And there are some natural frictions that can develop. So you may need to have a frank talk about that as you prepare for that move, depending on whether or not the mom or dad is able to have that discussion. There are safety things that need to be dealt with in the home. You need to just look at it from the eyes of what would be dangerous to mom. There may be throw rugs. There may be clutter that someone with low vision would have difficulty seeing. The temperature on the water heater could be an issue. You like really hot showers, but an older person with diminished sensation can be easily burned. Grab bars in the bathroom, a lot of bathroom issues, night lights, brighter lights in the hall, lots and lots of things. Just call me. I'll help you.
Well, that was Lynn Polk with the American Red Cross, so call her. But Sandy Silva is also with us from the Center for Practical Bioethics, and we'll take our last break of the hour right now and be back after this on News Radio 980 KMBZ. Lorella Boo back on Health Talk. We've been spending the last hour talking about caregiving, and here are a couple of numbers to remind you about. About 46 million Americans are providing care to an adult, relative, or friend, and more than 138 million Americans believe they will need to provide care to someone in the future. And Sandy Silva with the Center for Practical Bioethics, Lynn Polk, have been with us to discuss these issues. And Lynn, I'll just start with you with this last segment. You are all about making sure that people know that there are places they can go, resources that are available to help them through this sometimes very difficult situation.
Absolutely. Tons of information online. I didn't think to bring websites with me. There's one that's really good called lotsofhelpinghands.com where you can create your circle of care and put out the needs, and people can volunteer online, saving a lot of phone calls. Just lots of information, and they're always welcome to call the Red Cross, and I can give them help over the phone, or I can make a home visit.
Or they can go to the website, kcredcross.org.
Right.
Okay. And then Sandy Silva, you're all about early self-identification.
Absolutely. Caregiving is a very complex issue, and as we've mentioned, caregivers are faced with issues around housing and mobility and transportation and continued engagement in the community. The sooner that we all recognize that at one point in our life, we will either be a caregiver or be the recipient of care, the better off we all are. We're enjoying long lives. We're enjoying healthy lives, but we will all need help as we age, and that help is going to come from our friends and, most importantly, from those who love us and whom we love.
And where people can get more information on KC4 Aging and Community is?
www.kc4aic.org.
Okay, thank you very much. Sandy Silva, Center for Practical Bioethics, Lynn Polk with the American Red Cross. Thanks for spending time with us this evening. You've been listening to Health Talk, sponsored by Fresenius Medical Care and Midwest Nephrology Consultants, the Center for Practical Bioethics, raising and responding to ethical issues in health and healthcare for 25 years, and Blessed Trinity Home Health Care. Thanks for listening. Have a healthy week, everybody.
Opinions expressed on the preceding program are those of the host and guests and do not represent the opinion of KMBZ or Entercom Kansas City. The views expressed on Health Talk are those of the medical professional only. They are not meant to serve as medical advice. If you have a health issue, see your doctor or visit a clinic.